Hey gang, are you in a band in Austin? You're looking to make the leap from the band of schmoes to the band of pros? Well, you can start by rehearsing at Space. Space is a state-of-the-art affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. With 31 spacious rooms, fantastic PAs, and a friendly and courteous staff, Space is the place to get your creative endeavors underway. Call them at 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com and take the talent train from Schmoesville to Pro Town with Space.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a great weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. I had a good weekend. I had actually a really good pre-weekend. I took a weekend before the weekend. On Wednesday, I went to San Antonio out to this Hyatt Residence Club place. It's like a hill country resort just outside of San Antonio. My girlfriend is a member of that club, and her points were about to expire for the year. She buys into it. It's like a timeshare. You can go to all these different places around the country. Anyway, this one's just an hour or so away from me, or an hour and a half or so away from me. So I went out there, and we had a really good time, man. We hung out. We went hiking both days. One of the days, we went to this beautiful state park called Lost Maples, which is in Vanderpool, Texas, and we walked up the East Trail, which is what I found out to be the hardest trail in Central Texas. And let me tell you something, it is really hard. There's even a sign at one point, I'll post a photo of it on our How Did I Get Here Facebook page. There was one sign that's like, hey man, if you can't handle this for the next 1.5 miles, it's going to be rugged and uphill, baby. And it was, man. I had to take a couple of little breaks, not really had to sit down or anything, just had to kind of like, whoa. And I found out that doing like 2 hours of hiking like that, like kind of like uphill hiking, downhill hiking, rugged hiking, burns like 1,000 calories. Hello, I think I'm going to start hiking a lot more all the time. Anyway, Jenna and I had a great time as always. It's nice. You know, we've been seeing each other, dating, being boyfriend and girlfriend for the last few months now. And she lives in Houston, but we still manage to see each other a lot. We have a really great time. We're together, even just sitting around. Oh, we went to the movies. Yeah, we saw Uncut Gems after our hike on Thursday. And man, that is a heavy movie. And I suggest, look, here's how I describe it. There's a lot of movies, like any Darren Aronofsky movie, like Pie or like Requiem for a Dream. Yes, that is one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. Will I ever see it again? Absolutely not. I don't ever want to see that movie again, but I'm glad I saw it. That's how I feel about Uncut Gems. It's a brilliant movie. Unbelievable. It gives you anxiety. I think you should see it in the theater because you need to sort of experience the movie while you're watching it because it really takes you on this journey. It's not a very comfortable journey, but it does take you on a journey. It's a brilliant piece of art that stands up and will stand up and hold up for a long time. Adam Sandler's fantastic. All the actors in the movie are fantastic. It's a great movie. All right, there's my movie review. I think Jenna might have disliked it a little more than, I mean, I loved it, right? I think she liked it, but I think she was stressed out because it really is a stressful movie to watch. That's all. No spoilers. Check it out. Uncut Gems. Great thing. Then Saturday and Sunday, I worked on some tunes that I'm doing with Jay Milano. Coming up at the Next, which is the Austin Music Foundation Artist Development Program concert going on Friday, January 24th at Antone's. You can go to austinmusicfoundation.org to get involved. Jay Milano is one of our artists in the Artist Development Program. There's Day Eater, there's Sydney Wright, there's Kid Jones, there's Ray Prim, there's Calliope Musicals, and of course, Jay Milano and the great William Harris Graham. This concert will be going on there. Come on out and check it out, man. We made a record with those guys. My friends Einar and Frenchie produced it. I got to play on my friend William Harris Graham's tune. I got to hang out for a lot of the sessions. And I talked to actually every single person in the artist development program about their experience in the artist development program and their experience recording with Frenchie and Einar over there at the Bubble. And that will be coming out next Tuesday. So check that out. It's going to be a long show, 7 different little small interviews with people. All right. Anyway, I had a great weekend. I was working on tunes for Jay Milano. It was a great time. I'm doing this thing on Saturday. It's an XTC tribute show. I'll put a link to it on our How Did I Get Here Facebook page. A lot of people are doing it. Darren Murphy, Trish Murphy, Stephen Doster. A lot of great people. My friends John Green and Sela are putting it on. Amazing artists doing the music of an amazing band, all going to a great cause. It's taking place at Backstage here in Austin. So I'll post a link to that. That's going to be going on Saturday. A lot of stuff going on. I've got a very busy month this month. I'm glad I went to Lost Maples and walked around with Jen. I'm glad we hung out at that Hyatt Residence Club. It was great, man. We hot tubbed every day after we went hiking. I got some relaxation in. I got a lot of stuff going on. Got Skyrocket stuff. Got my own stuff going on. Got these shows with the Next. I've got a couple of Song Division gigs coming up at the end of the month. Just got a lot of stuff going on. A lot of podcast stuff. Putting together this big show with 7 different artists. That's a lot of work. So it was nice to take a couple of days off, sit back, and enjoy life a little bit in a relaxing way. All right? Guys, I have a great show for you today. Travis Kennedy, he is an engineer, mixing engineer, producer. You can find him at TravisKennedySound.com. He is absolutely fantastic, man. This dude has worked with Corbella, Otis Wilkins, Quiet Company, The Deer, Aaron Ivey, The Cuckoos, Dalton Rapatoni, I think that's what it says, Blue October. He assisted and still works with Tim Palmer, the great mixing engineer. He got his start out working at Electric Ladyland Studios in New York. He's got 2 recording degrees, and he started this great new educational series called Audio Pro Bootcamp, and you can find it at audioprobootcamp.com. You go in and you get an intensive course with all of these amazing engineers and producers, teaching you the ropes, showing you how it's done, showing you how to make great records. So if you are interested in that, go to audioprobootcamp.com to find out what Travis Kennedy is all about. Go to TravisKennedySound.com. He's a great dude, man. He reached out to me. He was like, hey, I'd like to come on the show, talk about this stuff, talk about this Audio Pro Bootcamp, which is super interesting. And it turns out he's had a really, really cool career so far. And he's a great guy, and we have a fantastic conversation. So please enjoy my conversation with the amazingly talented Travis Kennedy. Let's get down. So I don't know when I get people in here all the time that you've worked on their stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, recently the most recent one I think was Corbella.
Yeah.
I think me too.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're one of the names. Your work is really great.
Oh,
like
you.
I listened to that Deer album.
Oh yeah, I love that album.
What a great job, man.
Oh, thanks. Well, they did all the hard work.
They did the heavy lifting.
They wrote
the
songs and they played great, and Grant Johnson did a great job of recording it, so I just mixed the album.
Oh, I know Grant.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really good. He works at Wire, right?
Yeah. He recorded a lot of that at Church House.
Okay.
Yeah. And they did a lot of, they did
oh,
some
okay.
of the recording.
Oh, okay, sorry. I got confused with him
with
and this other guy.
Grant, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he did a lot of the recording at Church House, and then they did some, I think, at like the
right.
House Studios in Colorado or something like that.
They did a video at the Church House too, I remember.
Oh yeah.
I think yeah. Or they had some video on it from social media.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So I do want to talk about this Audio Pro Bootcamp.
Sure.
Is that something you started?
Yeah, I started it.
You went to engineering school. You got 2 degrees in audio.
Yeah, I got an associate, well, 2 associate degrees from South Plains College.
Where's that?
It's in Levelland, Texas.
Okay. Is that where you're from?
No, I'm from northeastern New Mexico.
Okay.
I grew up on a cattle ranch.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and then I got to South Plains and I realized, I was like, oh, here's what real musicians are like and what real music is like. And I was so far behind the curve. It was pretty crazy walking into that. But it was a great experience. I got 2 associate's degrees there, one in sound technology and one in performing arts technology. And then I used that basically as a prerequisite to go to the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences in Tempe, Arizona.
Okay. So you have experience in the school system of recording.
Yes.
And learning recording.
Yes. And then I taught at Media Tech Institute, and I taught the advanced program at the Recording Conservatory in Austin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that the one that was at...
It's TRCOA. It's like off like 360 and 2222 kind of area. Yeah.
Do you like doing that?
Oh, I love education for sure. I'm a nerd for audio, and even when my clients come over, I'm like showing them before and after and this and that, and they're
sure.
like, yeah, okay, well, it sounds good. So that's all we really care about. But I get kind of nerdy about it, which is, I love teaching about it.
So is that what this Audio Pro boot camp is?
Yeah, it's audio engineering education for sure. And it's a streamlined path to basically, like, what I saw as a trend from Media Tech and the Recording Conservatory of Austin. Like, you know, kids are spending $20,000 to $50,000 in audio education. Then they get out of school and there's really no jobs. You can get an internship at a studio. You might work 12 months, but there's no really guarantee of a job.
Right.
At all. And so the trend was, as you see these students leaving, getting in a ton of debt with no job. And so my fiance was actually talking about a yoga retreat, and I was thinking, like, why don't I start a thing like that, but instead a boot camp for audio engineering, and eliminate all the stuff that you don't need, or like the added basically BS that you'll probably never use again in your
weird math
career.
And physics stuff or something.
Yeah, like Ohm's law of learning resistance to it's great if you're gonna like build gear,
certain
things like that, but if you're gonna be an audio producer, recording engineer, mixer, there's a lot of things that you don't really need to have as part of the curriculum. So I thought, why don't I create a streamlined path to eliminate all the things that you don't need, keep the absolute essentials of what you do need, what studio engineers that are working are going to look for in an assistant to be able to do efficiently and well.
Right.
And eliminate everything else and do it in a very short amount of time, and then have actually just as good of an education and do it for a fraction of the price.
Right.
So the boot camp is only going to be $6,000 as opposed to $20,000 to $50,000, and they get to work at five or six different world-class studios. They get to work with people like Tim Palmer and Chris Athens and like Grammy award-winning engineers at several different studios, and for a fraction of the price. So
Stuart Sullivan,
Stuart Sykes, Matt Nevesky, Matt Melly, Dave Boyle, Danny Reich. I mean, it's like an all-star cast of engineers.
Yeah, it's great guys.
Yeah, they're all... I'm very, very lucky that Tim Palmer's been my mentor for like 9 years now since I moved here from New York City. And like through him, I got to meet a lot of people and establish really good connections. And all these engineers thought this was a wonderful idea to help the community and aspiring engineers without going into that debt. And it's going to help them too, because they'll probably be able to get some interns out of it that they like and they can use at their studios as well.
Right. How, explain to me, like, they go to like Wire Recording to talk to Stuart?
So it's a 6-week program.
Okay.
So the first 4 weeks are all about audio fundamentals and Pro Tools training, and it's 8-hour days along with 4-hour tutoring sessions after those 8 hours. So it's 12 hours per day.
Well, you know,
for 4 weeks straight. I mean, and you got to, you know, for a lot of people, they think that's, you know, that's intense, and it's a boot camp, so it is.
But
you
that's
know,
also
in the
like
real world,
recording days.
Right.
Yeah.
In the real world, that's what people are going to be doing.
Yeah.
They're going to expect you to do even more than that.
Exactly.
Know? When I worked at Electric Lady, it was 15 to 17 hours a day, 6 days a week, you know, and that's, you just have to get used to that.
Yeah. You gotta suck it up, baby.
Right.
It's what you want to do.
Absolutely.
That's what you're asking for.
Right.
Right.
And so that's the first 4 weeks. And then the last 2 weeks is going to be going to all these studios to get hands-on experience with all these prolific engineers. So The first 2 days is going to be recording at Church House Studios with Dave Boyle and at the Orb with Matt Noveski producing and Matt Melly engineering. And then it's going to be, so there's only 12 students allowed in the boot camp total. But when they get broken out in the last 2 weeks, it's only going to be 6 students per studio. So okay. In the first 2 days, 6 students will go to Church House, 6 students will go to the Orb, and then the next day they'll switch.
Okay.
So they'll see different studio, different engineers, different bands. And then after the first 2 days, the next 2 days is going to be with Danny Reich and Stuart Sykes doing overdubs. And so they'll do that. And then the next 2 days after that will be Tim Palmer and Stuart Sullivan mixing the tracks.
That's cool, recorded. Man.
And then finally, when that's finished, they all get to go to Chris Athens' mastering studio. And, well, in between time, so after the mixes by Tim and Stuart Sullivan are going to be finished, the students will have an opportunity to mix the same tracks themselves.
Right.
And then we'll all go to Chris Athens' mastering studio, and he's not only going to master the tracks that were mixed by Tim and Stuart Sullivan, but also master the students' mixes.
Right.
That they were able to create from it as well. So
awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. When does it start? Is it there's a finite start time or an actual definite start time?
It's July 13th through August 21st of 2020.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's intense, man.
But yeah. Yeah, it's going to be intense. So I'm really excited.
Are you working on the curriculum with those guys? Like, are you guys kind of like, did you guys kind of partner on that thing? Or did you write it all and like invite them into it and say like, this is what I'm doing?
I wrote it all and invited them into it. But like, basically when it goes to the big time prolific engineers at their studios, like they're just going to do what they do. You know, and then students are allowed to ask questions. And of course, studio etiquette is definitely going to be
you know, how to be cool.
Yeah. It's going to be definitely taught beforehand because, you know, that's a huge thing. If you want to become an assistant at a good studio and, you know, you're not to be seen or heard, you just do your job basically.
Yeah.
But you get to ask questions in between time and you get to see people working with real bands and then they'll get hands-on experience as well. So,
right.
Yeah.
That's rad, man.
Yeah, I think it'll be a great thing.
Yeah.
It'll be really cool for students to not go into so much debt. And, you know, if they only spend $6,000 on the boot camp, then if they were planning on going to another audio school that was 20 or 50, they can use that money on gear or they can use that money to intern at a studio 12 hours a day for another 6 months or whatever, you know. Like, and that'll get them much further ahead than going a year and a half to an audio school where they get out and they're like, oh, now what do I do?
Yeah. You know,
so...
Yeah. Dude, that's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah. So everyone can go to audioprobootcamp.com.
Yeah.
Like, check it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
To get involved and see what's going on.
Yeah.
All right. So you're some kid in northeastern New Mexico.
Yeah.
When did being an engineer, did you start off playing music or did you?
Yeah, I started out, so... I bought my first guitar. My parents would not buy a guitar for me because they thought that it would be something I'd pick up and put down. So I ended up buying a guitar out of the Sears catalog that was a Sinosonics guitar that came with a little 5-watt amp or something and a cable and a tuner. I don't even think the tuner worked. And it was a piece of junk. But anyways, where I grew up, there's more cattle than people. Right. You know, and there was
is that near Clovis or something?
No? It's way in the northeastern corner, so it's like 45 minutes away from Texas, 45 minutes away from Colorado.
Okay,
so right up there, really tiny, tiny town. And I got the guitar in the mail, and I just started, didn't even know how to tune it, and just started playing to one of the two radio stations that we got there. It was either oldies or country,
yeah.
And I just fiddled around with it to the point where I could actually play some chords and kind of figured out.
You learned the chords yourself, just like that?
Well, I had books and stuff to help. I mean, this was back, you know, we didn't have YouTube. And, you know,
90s.
It was still dial-up internet, you know, at that time. And so, you know, your resources for learning were very limited, especially, you know, out there. I mean, I remember at the time, this is going to totally date me, but we were super excited when you could download one song from Napster overnight.
Yeah.
And be like, oh my God, I got this one song for, you know. Like,
yeah.
But anyways, yeah, that was where I started. And so after I started learning how to play just a few songs, then a couple friends got different instruments, and then we started a band that was absolutely horrifying. We were awful.
What were you called?
Oh my God, what were we called?
First band names are always amazing.
Oh, it was so terrible. I can't remember. I think it was like Crosswind something.
Oh, yeah.
Crosswind something.
Well, you were out there.
The wind blows like crazy there. So it was something with Crosswind in it. But yeah,
what kind of music?
It was
horrible.
Horrible.
In the genre.
It was really
horrible.
Bad. The genre of horrible. It was maybe like kind of alternative country, maybe.
Oh, really? That's kind of hip. How old were you?
I was like 16.
That's pretty
17.
Hip for a 16-year-old.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that's kind of, you know, country was really big there. But like the songs, we didn't even learn other people's songs first. We'd like just tried to start writing our own crap.
Yeah.
And it was really bad. But anyways, when we had like three songs that we thought were really good, we're like, we need to record these songs. And so I quote borrowed the school's little cassette recorder, you know, the ones that you see like in an interrogation room with a big record and play button.
Yeah.
You know, so I bought like...
It wasn't even a four track, it was just a cassette recorder?
It was just a cassette recorder. That was like the resources that I had to get this down, you know, because we thought these songs were great. And we put it in the middle of a ranch house in the living room with drums and bass and guitar, acoustic guitar and electric guitar and vocals. And we recorded it, and when we played it back, we were like, this sounds so bad. Like, what is happening? Like,
yeah.
Which initially, that sparked my interest of like, what makes records sound great, you know? And I love music, and I love playing. So South Plains College was the closest to where I grew up of doing something.
Was that a negotiation with your parents in some way, where they're like, we want you to go to school, and you're like, okay, I've got this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I'll go to school, but also do this.
Right. Surprisingly, yeah. they were really supportive. I actually started out as a commercial music major, which is basically just like a learn to be a rock star degree, which is really doesn't make sense.
That's what Keith Richards got, right?
Yeah. Right? And Well, he did it. He's done very well.
Yeah, he's done very well without the schooling and rock starness.
Yeah, for sure. But the first semester, I had to take intro to audio engineering, and after that class, I was like, I'm switching. This is my game.
Yeah. Did they have a studio there that you?
Yeah, they had a couple studios. and it was. It wasn't a great facility. I mean, it was, you know, you only could get an associate's degrees there, so
sure.
It wasn't.
I went to school.
Wasn't a lot of big time studios, but you learn the basics kind of. And like I said, it was a great prerequisite for once I knew that I wanted to do that. I probably knew I needed to go to like a better school for that, and that's why, like, to get into the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences at the time in Arizona, they only accepted 12 students a year. And they had Neve and SSL consoles and Neotech consoles and big time studios.
And where is that? In New York?
It's in Tempe, Arizona.
Okay.
Well, so they have a facility in Tempe and one in Gilbert. So
okay.
And you spent half your time in one place and half your time in the other. So that was I knew that I basically had to have, you know, you had to have submit an application, you had to go through an interview process, and they wouldn't just accept anybody into that school. So having an associate's degree from South Plains
gave you a leg up.
Yeah, got me into that school.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you went there for a couple years?
Yeah, I went there for a couple years and finished that school, and then headed to New York City where I worked at Electric Lady Studios.
Yeah. So how did you get that? I mean,
I worked my butt off in school, and I graduated at the top of the class. So that was one of the few schools that Electric Lady accepted interns from.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so being at the top of the class, and then, you know, I've always been a huge Jimi Hendrix fan, and, like, that was where I wanted to go. From the second I stepped into that school, my sight was set on going there. So
And the history with that is that, that he built that studio for himself, or had it built for himself.
Yeah, basically, it was a nightclub before it was a studio.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And so you got to work with all kinds of people there. Eddie Kramer?
Yeah, Eddie
Kramer.
He
worked with Hendrix?
Yeah, the time that I got... Oh, man, this is a great story. So working with Eddie Kramer, I was already working at Electric Lady for several months, and... You started out as an intern, and then I started working with the techs, and then I became a general assistant. And so it was several months in, and I had this dream. It was a black and white dream, and it was me sitting across the table from Jimi Hendrix. We were both smoking cigarettes, and he was telling me about all this new music that I should get into and I should check out. And I was telling him, of course, I was telling Jimi Hendrix, like, all the music that he should go and listen to in that dream. And then the next day, I walked into the studio, and the studio manager, Lee Foster, he was like, guess who you're assisting today? I'm like, who is it? He's like, you're assisting Eddie Kramer. And I'm like, this is too weird. Go in the studio, and I find out that we're actually working on Hendrix tracks that hadn't been released.
You're kidding me.
No. Like, that was the... My mind was just blown the whole day. I was freaking out. It was such a bizarre experience. It wasn't his stuff... He was playing lead guitar, and on one track, it was him with a band called Love.
Okay.
Yeah. And they were old 2-inch tapes reels that they found of the multi-tracks of him playing lead guitar on one song and then doing rhythm guitar and background vocals on another song.
With
and
Love.
That's what we were mixing that day. What's that?
With Love.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
They had like the best font of their era.
Yeah, right? Yeah, totally. I love that font.
Weren't they like a big, they were like a hard, like acid rock, right? That's kind what of. It was called then.
Yeah.
Predated metal.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool stuff. I couldn't believe it. It's like sitting there watching Eddie Kramer literally solo Jimi Hendrix's guitar.
Oh my God.
And do what he does on his guitar to make it sound like...
Jimmy.
And Jimmy, I was just blown away. It was so...
What was he like as a dude? Did you get some...
Eddie Kramer?
Yeah.
He was really nice, but really hard on me.
That's good, man. He probably needed that.
Oh, yeah. Of course. I knew that he was, you know, I knew that that was the
drill.
The drill, you know, like, which was great. I gladly accepted the challenge. One of the most important roles that I had in assisting him was to always keep the tape delay, the real tape delay, not a plug-in,
right.
The real tape delay running the entire time while he was mixing. And to never let it, as soon as it, you know, gets to the end of the reel, you have to flip it and press play and record and start it over again.
Right.
And he never wanted the mix to, like, be waiting on me to get the tape delay for his guitar or for his vocals or whatever. But meanwhile, he's telling me to do all these other things while I'm doing that.
Right.
And I was over at the patch bay patching in, like, 5 pieces of gear at one time that he wanted me to do. And
yeah.
The tape slipped off the reel. Of the tape delay, and I looked over, and he looked at me, and he got a big ball of gaffer's tape and just threw it at my head. Yeah, so that was fun. And the first thing that he made me do is go literally polish all the patch cables. Yeah.
Well.
So, I was like, gladly, anything, great.
Is that what you do to your interns when they first come in now?
No, I'm pretty good. I'm, compared to Electric Lady, I feel like I'm extremely nice to interns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So who else did you work with up there? You worked on like Ryan Adams records and...
Yeah, Jamie Candeloro was working on, he was the main engineer for Easy Tiger.
Oh, okay. That was a great record.
Yeah. And that was the record that we were working on at Electric Lady.
Was that like 2007 or... 2009.
Yeah, it must have been 2000. Well, it probably came out in 2007, but we were probably working on it in 2005 or 2006. Yeah.
So you're just this kid in there with those guys, and
yeah, it's pretty intimidating when you're,
hell yeah,
you know, working with those caliber. And I'm still a huge Ryan Adams fan, and was, you know, a huge Ryan Adams fan
through the whatever happened.
Before I knew that he was even coming into the studio, and that kind of became his like go-to, and I think it still is. He has his own studio now, but I know when he's in New York, he goes there, and he was there for months, you know. And I was super excited to get to work with him because he was already one of my favorite artists. So,
How was he to work with? It must have been interesting watching him work. He's a guy that's flooding the room with his ideas.
He's one of the few artists I've ever seen that's like a direct stream of consciousness from somewhere else to his finger or to his brain of creativity.
Yeah.
Like, he brings in a typewriter into the studio, no laptop, no nothing, so he can type out whatever he wants to do. And
lyrics wise,
and he'll write lyrics first a lot of times, and so it's really easy for him to just type it on the typewriter, grab the piece of paper, and do whatever he needs to do with it. And one night, Jamie Candeloro was out of town, and the assistant lived in Brooklyn, and he'd already gone home. Wasn't expecting Ryan in the studio, and Ryan wanted to get in at like 2 a.m. And I was the only person there, and they asked me if I wanted to do it, and I said, of course I will. So it was just me and him in the studio with the typewriter, and he typed out the song, and then he goes and puts the piece of paper on the floor drum, or the floor tom, and we record the drum beat first, and then he plays bass guitar, and then he played acoustic guitar, and then he sang vocals, and the song was Two. The biggest song on the record.
Jesus.
And I was just like, this is insane. This is...
You watched him just write and make that song.
Right. Like, it was unbelievable to have, like, in such a short amount of time, be like, this is... I think...
And it's one of your favorite artists. You must have just been freaking out, man.
I was freaking out the whole time. I was just like, don't mess this up. Just don't mess it up. Whatever you do, just stay out of the way and don't mess this up, you know? I think they went back and re-recorded some stuff on it, you know. I don't know if all those tracks,
but you saw him make the
actually stuck. But yeah, that night creation. It was created. I was there for that, and that was a super special moment.
Wow, that's awesome, man.
Yeah,
how exciting.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, who else did you get to work with there?
I got to work with Russ Elovato, who did the D'Angelo Voodoo record,
right?
And I got at the time when I was there, he was working on the Roots Game Theory album.
Oh, wow.
So
that must have been really cool.
That was really... His work is absolutely mind-blowing. There was, you know, NS10 speakers. They're known for not sounding...
There you go, baby.
A couple pair right next to me. Yeah.
I'm 51, so that's what I'm used to.
Sure.
Then maybe... I don't know if he is, too. But sorry, what were you going to say?
And it became... You know, the NS10s were the standard for all of it, but they really don't sound... NS10s don't sound that great.
No.
You know, they're not super hi-fi speakers. And at Electric Lady, we had NS10s, and then we had some near fields that were bigger. He used Dyna Audios.
Right.
And then we had, like, the soffit-mounted speakers. And the Dyna Audios were, like, really good hi-fi, you know, big speakers for the midfields. And I walked into the room one time, and I was like, man, this mix is unbelievable. It's insane. And I swore we were listening to him on the Dyna Audios, and it was the NS10s.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, this is just a whole different ballgame.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what made you want to move to Austin? Like, what happened? Your internship came to a close there, and...
Well, I actually got hired after 3 months of interning, but the higher pay there was very, very low.
Yeah.
And the way it works at Electric Lady is the highest position you can get to is an assistant.
Yeah.
You can't, because they're bringing in engineers from all over the world.
Right.
You know, the Adele's 25 was done there. The biggest Weezer, the Blue Album was done. I mean, you name it. Like, hotshots are in there all the time. So they're bringing in...
And Rick Ocasek probably has his own guy had his own guy. And
Yeah, totally. So they bring in all their hotshot engineers, and you're the assistant to them. And so there was never really a point where you were going to get even more than an assistant credit on anything, really, because there was no real room to move up, and I was working 15 to 17 hours a day, and if you divided that by the money you were making, it was less than minimum wage. And in New York City, it's very expensive, and so...
You weren't living in New York City, were you?
I was.
Oh, wow,
I was
shit.
Living in the city, which was... I was living in a shoebox of a 2-bedroom apartment, and there was 3 of us living there. So one person lived in the living room.
Yeah.
The other 2 of us lived in the bedrooms. The bedrooms were so small that my full-size blow-up mattress touched each wall.
Wow.
That's how small. And okay. there was no closet. There was no AC. You had to get like a window unit that you had to schlep three blocks from the closest Kmart. And so, you know, I just got really tired of like never having any money, no life, no, you know, no way to move up or progress. And I got an opportunity to help build a studio here, actually, that's in Kyle now. It's called Studio 1916. It's owned by Blake Atwell. He wanted to build a studio, and his dad was, you know, wanted to invest in a lot of gear and everything like that. And so I knew him from school at South Plains, and he called me up, and we got that ball rolling. So I helped build that studio, and I still work there quite often. It's an amazing studio. I love that studio.
Yeah.
But I became freelance to just to be able to work out of several different studios. And then, you know, I started working with Tim Palmer a lot at his place.
How did you end up connecting with him?
He was a keynote speaker at an Audio Engineering Society event at Blue Rock Studios in Wimberley. Have you been there?
I don't know. Maybe.
It's owned by Billy Crockett. It's an amazing facility. It's like, it's beautiful. It's a world class. I mean, they have a Neve 50.
Maybe I haven't. I don't think I've been there then.
It's really nice. But anyways, he was the, Tim was the keynote speaker, one of the keynote speakers at an Audio Engineering Society event. And I initially met him there. I said hello. We really didn't talk. And then a couple weeks later, my friend scored backstage passes to the Sigur Rós concert. And when we were waiting to get backstage to say hi after the concert, Tim was 5 feet away from me waiting too, because he happened to know the front of house engineer and he was going to go talk to him. And I just started, you know, talking with him and told him, hey, if you ever need any help, I'm all about, you know, whatever you need, I'm here for you. And a couple weeks later, he called me up and I started working for him, and then 9 years later, I'm still doing projects with him.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What a great guy, man.
Oh,
I love that guy.
If out of the 2 years that I worked at Electric Lady that many hours, I feel like I learned more from Tim in the first 6 months of working with him
sure.
than I did that entire time.
Yeah. He's an open dude, too.
He's an incredible human being.
Yeah.
For sure.
I don't know him super well, but I reached out to him one day and just asked him to be on the show. And then ever since then, like, we've gone to dinner and, like...
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. I've hung out with him at places where I run into him. He's just he's a good dude. And his work is amazing.
Yeah. He's...
His body of work is phenomenal.
It's incredible. He doesn't consider himself much of a techie or, like, kind of a nerd as far as the tech stuff goes and whatnot.
Right.
But he, I think, has the most attention to detail of anybody that I've ever seen work.
Really?
Like his attention to timing and tuning and feel, and you know, he's the person that taught me, like, hey, if you feel like it needs a guitar part or a shaker part or a tambourine part, they can do it, and the band can always tell, or a keyboard part, whatever, to help the mix. You don't need to go overboard with it, you know, you don't need to like inject yourself into somebody else's project, but if you do it in a subtle way that helps the mix or helps the feeling of the song, go for it. And they can tell you to mute it if you want. But Tim has his hand, like, he's almost every mix that he does, I would consider him a producer of the track in a way too.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a way that, almost a mixer can, like a person can edit a movie that wasn't going so well.
Yeah.
There's that weird term that I never like to hear when I'm recording. Oh, we'll fix it in the mix, which you're like, dude.
Yeah.
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 But you can sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. And, you know, he'll
maybe not polish a turd, but polish like a nice...
Freeze it and then polish.
Yeah, or like polish a nice piece of gold that needs some polish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, so do you write songs, and or do you, like, as a producer, like, what do you do when you get in there? Do you...
I help be the outside source of like whatever helps them get to their vision. You know, if there's something that's super obvious, like I'll definitely point it out. You know, if a verse is 2 minutes long and it just doesn't go anywhere, or if, you know, if there's the chord progression's lacking in some way or whatever, I'll try to enhance and help that. But And I help with the songwriting process and the melodic process a little bit, but I try to just help enhance, producing-wise anyways, help enhance their vision instead of trying to...
lay your trip on them.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think a lot of times the bands really don't want that. Unless the band is like, we want you to kind of take over, then that's a different story. Then I will kind of have more of a heavy hand in it. But for the most part, I think bands enjoy producers that kind of let that just enhance and make whatever their vision sound great, you know.
Tell me about Roy Lee Jones.
Roy Lee Jones. Oh, man. So I think he might be 71 now. He did his first and only record with me so far. He might do another one. I met him. I was working at Pro Tape.
Yeah.
I was the audio salesman / Pro Tools trainer at Pro Tape.
Is that still going on, Pro Tape?
They do a lot of transfers still.
Sorry, go ahead.
But the tape stock business for even videos, like, pretty much non-existent now. Everything's digital. So they still have a place in North Austin that they do, like, printing and transfers, like VHS and cassettes, stuff like that.
To DVDs and
CDs
and,
Yeah, totally. I was working there when they still sold a lot of audio gear and stuff like that. And I got a phone call, and it was Roy, and he was asking needed a studio, and he was just like going through the phone book, and he thought Pro Tape would be a studio.
Right.
And he called up, and I was like, no, this isn't a recording studio, but what do you need? And he needed a voiceover done for a pomegranate commercial, of all things. Kind of strange. And I was like, well, I have a really good setup at my place. I can easily do a voiceover for you if you want. You know, and I was hurting for money at the time.
Yeah.
So I said, I'll come pick you up and do it, not knowing anything about this guy, whatever. But I was like, I might as well go for it. So I picked him up at a hotel downtown and took him to my place to do this voiceover. And we started talking about music after we did the voiceover, and we were just chatting, and he's like, do you mind if I sing you something? I said, of course, you know, no problem, please do.
Yeah.
And he starts singing, and my jaw about hit the floor, and I was like, you've never put out a record before, ever? He said, no, would you mind producing me can we get that going? I said, absolutely.
Wow.
And that record, because he lives in LA, that record ended up taking about 5 years to finish.
Okay.
Which was a grueling long time, but we had, there was a, you know, it didn't take 5 years of doing it constantly.
Right.
It was like in between times when we could. It was very much a labor of love project.
Yeah. And it wasn't Chinese Democracy.
No. Yeah. You know, but I'm super proud of that record. It's one of my favorite things I've ever worked on.
It seems like you are, just from your website and the placement of that, right? That's why I asked.
Yeah.
The first guy I asked about was like, I never heard of this guy, but it seems like Travis likes him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love, and it was a concept record, you know, and he did give me full liberty of handpicking the studio musicians that played on it. And
who'd you get?
We got Johnny Vogelsang.
Love him.
On bass. Ed Jarosinski on drums.
Love him.
Brian Donahoe and a couple other guys on horns, and Blake Atwell did most of the guitar work on it, basically all the guitar work on it, and then Roy, and then background singers were Angie Kogutz and Tara Williamson and Angie Davis on that. So yeah, it was a pretty all-star cast.
Yeah.
I know I'm forgetting names on this right now.
That's all right.
But I shouldn't.
What'd you do on the Blue October Any Man in America album?
I assisted Tim.
Okay.
On the mix. He mixed all that record, and okay, I assisted him on that. So
Same as the acoustic evening with Blue October?
Yes.
Okay.
Same as that. I do a lot of, like, prepping the tracks, doing some editing, some light tuning if I need to, getting it all set up to where Tim can just go in and drive, you know. So that's a lot of the records that I work on with him.
Otis Wilkins?
Yeah, I recorded. Tim and I, well, Tim kind of produced it, and he was at several of the studio sessions, but I recorded. I was the recording engineer on that.
Cool. Where did you guys do that? At the church house?
We did a couple days at maybe just one day at church, one or two days at church house, and then a couple days at Studio 1916 in Kyle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, let me keep on asking you questions. Sure. Transgressor, you did that with Tim, you assisted
yeah.
Tim?
Yeah.
Mixing that, right?
Yeah.
Who?
Tim.
Who recorded that?
Matt Parmenter recorded all that.
Yeah.
And then Tim mixed it all, and I assisted him on the mixing.
Have you been to his ice cream?
I have not, but oh my good Lord, their gear is...
Their gear is really like, cool, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Their gear list is really, really great. And I haven't got it, and Matt's a great guy. I actually really need to go and hang out with him at the studio. I just hadn't got a chance.
Me too.
Yeah.
He's invited me.
Yeah. It looks incredible.
There's a good, strong community of you guys.
Yeah.
Of the engineers and producers. You guys hang out together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's really cool like that. I don't feel like Austin's a place where we're all trying to compete for each other's jobs, you know? And everybody's happy to give... I mean, I can reach out to any of those engineers that are on this list of the boot camp or several, you know, 10 or more engineers outside of that, and if I had a problem or if I needed a question on what do you like to do on kick drum, or I have what you do for 808s or this or that, they're all super happy to give you their knowledge. And it's not like, no, it's my secret. It's like, they're not, it's not about that. It's very much about community in that aspect.
I did a record that Jack Joseph Puig mixed.
Oh, wow.
And he does one of those, he's like a guy that speaks at one of those, have you seen those things in Tape Out magazine where there's, it's not a boot camp, but there's a mix with the masters or something,
I think is what it's called, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, it's funny, I ran into him at the airport like a year ago, and I could just tell by his stance, like from behind, I knew it was him.
You knew it was him?
He's got such a... Have you ever met him?
Huh.
Such a strong character. But there's a guy who's a producer here in town who I will leave his name out so that he doesn't get mad that I told this story. But he knew I was friends with Jack, and he had gone into some record that he produced, Jack mixed, and he went there to do the hang. And there's one thing, like the guy that produced our record with us, Jack didn't want him anywhere near the studio. He was like,
oh, wow.
I don't want that guy. I don't want that guy to call me. I don't want that guy to come here.
Wow.
He can call you. You deal with his shit. So anyway, so the artist brought this guy, the producer, and he went in there the first day, and he was like, man, you know, I got that first mix. He went, maybe not the first day, maybe second or third day. He's like, man, I listened to that first mix. It's so amazing, man. How'd you get that that snare drum? And I guess Jack stood there cross-armed looking at him and goes, I don't divulge my secret to people, and walked away. Anyway, I'm glad that that's not a thing here.
Yeah, in New York City, that's where he works, right? New York?
No, he's an L.A. guy.
Oh, he's an L.A. guy. Oh.
He had a room at Ocean Way there.
Oh, okay.
For a long time.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. In New York, it was, I think it's maybe the difference between just like the how Austin people are compared to New York or maybe LA too.
Yeah.
But in New York it was very different.
A little more cutthroat.
Oh yeah. And people didn't want to even take the time to even try to seem like have a community of knowing or not knowing or divulging secrets or whatever it was to like help everybody out. It
didn't, yeah.
Didn't, and maybe it's changed.
Well, I know that you also probably have your list. For a little while, there was a time when I tried my hand at producing records for people, but it was very hard on the local level, like financially, and just like all about, it was so hard, and the work I was doing wasn't as exciting, and I just didn't have the patience to wait it out, you know?
Yeah.
But I forgot where I was going with that. It had to do with the community. But there are people like, you know, that you can call and ask and...
Sure.
Delta. I know Boyle's a good guy like that, yeah. And Tim seems like Love a good Dick. Guy like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It is hard producing local. I mean, the budgets are shrinking, not only on a, you know, local artist level, but...
All around.
All around. Like, you talk to any major label or studio, the budgets are maybe an eighth or a quarter of what they were, you know, even 5-10 years ago.
Do you actively go see bands and like kind of?
I used to a lot. I was in a band called Digital Antique that played, you know, probably at least 4 shows a month for long time, you know, for like 7 years. So I was very active in the
music community
like that. But, you know, if you're busy mixing, which is what I primarily do now, you know, after you spend 8 or 10 hours
you're not gonna
on
go.
A song, you just don't, like, your ears are shot. And you have to protect your ears, too. You
know? No, you
like,
can't.
And go see live shows. And I still do occasionally, but it's more like going and seeing somebody at the Parish or the Moody Theater or things like that where you know it's going to sound incredible and it's not going to be like in a bad room with a bad mix trying to watch a local band. But I should go out more. I should force myself to do that, but it's sometimes hard when your ears are shot at the end of the day.
Yeah. When you're taking on a project like, you know, producing or mixing or anything, obviously the songs, the material and all that stuff, but what is it ultimately that makes you say yes to a project?
I think the caliber of songwriting is what makes me, and the musicianship. I mean, you can tell pretty quick of where you can or can't go with a project just by the lyrics and the chord progression, you know, and the melody, you know, if that is there, even if the musicianship isn't that great or the singing isn't that, you know, for the demo anyways, but the songs are great, then I'm all in, you know. And you know, if the songs are really good, I'll cut my rate quite a bit, you know.
Sure.
If it's because you believe in it,
yeah,
and you have that passion behind it, and you know that you can get them the songs to where they need to be,
right.
So
it's funny, you know, Dwight Baker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. He's actually, he might be added to the boot camp. He's on the website.
He's a good boot camp guy.
Yeah,
he seems like he'd give you the Eddie Kramer if you were assisting him.
Oh yeah, yes.
I feel like he's giving me the Eddie Kramer just when we're hanging out.
Yeah, he's definitely done that a couple times that I've been around, and he would be definitely a good one to like scared straight style of the engineers. We're hoping to have him, but his schedule is really up in the air because of touring.
Because of Wind and Wave and stuff.
Touring. And Adrian Quesada as well.
Oh, yeah.
He's agreed to do the boot camp, but Black Pumas right now are just a rocket ship.
Nominated for Grammys, Living the Dream.
Two nights sold out at Stubbs. I mean,
that's outside at Stubbs, not like what we think of as Stubbs that we play with our bands.
Right. It's so crazy. Just a few years ago, they were playing a residency at Seaboys.
At Seaboys for free or whatever. Yeah.
And now they're just... It's unbelievable, but I'm so happy for him and for them, and they deserve all the best, you know.
So what a great band. Great music. Yeah. Great songs. Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say, was I moderated a panel. I work with the Austin Music Foundation, and I moderate panels for them and stuff. That's one of my jobs there. Mm-hmm. One of the things that comes in, I do consultations with artists, one of the things that comes in is people are so over the top, like worried about like getting a publicist. And I've had people that have come in there, or one band in specific that had gone in there, had no music recorded or available, but had hired a publicist and was trying to make their Facebook numbers go up. And I was like, because we live in a time where, like, you know, even say when you were downloading a song from Napster overnight, it's different. Like before, we didn't live in this sort of like popularity. Do you know what I'm saying? Like you kind of had to be good to get a gig, to play a club, and then you had to be good enough for people to come back and see you again.
Right.
Then you know what I mean? Right, like all totally. This stuff. And on this panel that I did with Dwight, there was someone, I think the panel was on making a record or all this stuff, and a person was talking about branding and publicity and all this stuff, and he was like, man, you just focus on having a good song. Because then everything else kind of falls into place after that.
Absolutely.
If the material is incredible...
Absolutely.
And undeniable, then why wouldn't it see the light of day?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why that Black Pumas have gone from Seaboys residency to playing 2 sold-out shows. Yeah. Like, the songs are incredible. It's incredible musicians. amazing producing and recording on it, like, and the songs are wonderful. Like, that's, you know, it started with that. It wasn't like, oh, I'm gonna spend $20,000 on a publicist to like try to promote
no,
my
shit. It was just from the thing where you go play a show and people are in the room with you and they connect and react.
Totally.
Yeah. There's it. You know, I don't know where the advent of all that stuff is leading us. I mean, it definitely has led us, like, even socially, and we don't have to get into this, but, you know, we got this guy as a president that is kind of like, that's a symptomatic of the sort of praise that we give people that are well-known.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it doesn't really matter what it is that they've created or made. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a weird time with social media and interactions of like the virtual existence compared to what reality is and what people can get exposed to that isn't necessarily truth, but the, you know, people believe, you know, they're scrolling on Facebook and they, even without even looking anything up, they see one post about something, but
right,
and they believe it, you know, and they just move on believing that, and then that's a source of their argument with somebody over politics or whatever.
Right.
It's really bizarre.
I feel like there's a lot more, like, people react to that stuff more than somebody putting up a new song. Like, I know
Absolutely. When
I released a record last year, an EP, it didn't get as many likes as, like, a cute picture of my dog or something, but I spent a long time working on it, a lot of money. I worked at the church house, had to deal with Dave on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's really hard to, and if somebody comes up with the solution for it, I would love to hear it, but it is very strange. I can put a picture up of my dog and it'll get 150 likes.
But you mix this great record of the deer
that I worked on for 5 years, I can post it and it'll get 10 likes.
I'm glad it's not just me that experiences that, because at first I was like, man, do people like hate my music? I mean, I've gone for a long time doing it without anybody telling me to get out. You know what I mean?
it's a very strange thing.
It's a strange time.
And I think people just don't, a lot of people I just don't think have the attention span or just want to, like, go and to somebody's on a Facebook post and listen to a 3.5-minute, 4-minute song. It's just really difficult. They'd rather just go to Spotify and then, you know, have a playlist that's whatever the popular playlist, so they don't have to think about it or whatever, you know. But
yeah,
there's still a lot of true music lovers that
that
will go and they will seek new music out, and then, you know, the algorithms of having a unique and cool new artist that creates a whole, you know, radio station of other unique stuff,
right,
and then they discover artists that way. I think that's really cool. But as far as social media posting about anything creative, kind of video-wise and music-wise, it's really hard because there's also a lot of advertisements that are shoved in your face on Instagram and Facebook, and like that's the big thing, is like everybody lives on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat, and so everybody knows that, and everybody's pushing their ads all on that, so your feed starts to become like one big ad,
right?
And which is hard to sift through that stuff too, you know.
Has that been something in the studio that, say, when you're working with the band, like, hey, I know you got to do this, but let's put those phones down and focus on the jam right now?
Oh, almost every, especially if I'm producing.
If there's a
producer and I'm just engineering, or if I'm just mixing,
then you don't say.
If I'm mixing, they could be on their phones, and that's fine.
Yeah, right.
Like,
right.
Or if I'm just the engineer, but if I'm
When you're in the engaged,
producing, and that, I'm like, put your phones away. Like, don't even have them on or around us at all. Like, this, that's not what this is for. You know, but it is hard. It's just, and they all, you know, during the process, I got to post this on Instagram, post that on Instagram, and that. And it's like, at the end of the day in the studio that they're paying for, they've lost 2 hours.
Lost some vibe.
You know, yeah.
Because they were too busy trying to make sure everyone knew that the vibe was happening.
Absolutely. Yeah, you got it. You nailed it.
It's so weird. What are you working on now outside of the Audio Pro Bootcamp? What are you doing these days?
I'm working with,
you excited about
band called Obsolete Machines.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing an EP with them.
I think they were on the show a long time ago.
Yeah, I think they may have been.
Yeah.
There's four great tracks with them. And then at the start of the year, I'll be working with Tim with this artist named Tarja. It's T-A-R-J-A. Mm-hmm. She was the lead singer of Nightwish back in the day.
I don't know Nightwish.
And we're going to be doing live mixing for, it's like 5.1 surround sound for like DVDs. She's huge in all of like Europe and right. South America. And I'd never even heard of her before. But then we've consistently worked with her over
I last saw her on your
years.
On your list of people.
Yeah, and it's like an operatic vocalist with a pretty heavy rock band. And they do have like a lot of orchestral elements to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to be doing that at the first part of the year. And then it's going to get really heavy into the boot camp and all that stuff leading up until...
Yeah, you got a lot to do. July. That starts in July. Mm-hmm. And so there's still some spots left. People can go to audioprobootcamp.com and get... sign up.
Yep.
You got to qualify in some way?
Yeah, you do. You have
can't
to.
Can't just be some...
yeah, exactly. And I would rather just not do the boot camp at all if it came down to not having the quality of students that
sure.
I would actually
right.
want for
right,
it.
Right, right, right.
And so you have to fill out a registration form, and then you get basically a questionnaire sent to you that you have to fill out and send back of, like, basically telling, like, why you want to be there, your experience, and kind of like a verification of we know who's going to be the right people to actually...
Got to vet them.
To take the program. And then I'm going to do a phone interview with them as well to really know that... I mean, the caliber of engineers that they're going to be working with in the boot camp, they don't want people that just want to make beats in their bedroom or, you know, or electronic music artists that don't really know what they're getting into, and they get signed up and then they're like a disruption basically to everybody else, that sort of thing.
Right.
And I saw that at both schools that I taught at and the schools that I went to. You know, it's a distraction, and ultimately they're just throwing their money away. Those students
right.
are. And so I definitely want to have the vetting process be where it's only people that really, really are passionate about this and learning well and being respectful of the process and learning what they need to do to actually become successful at it instead of just, you know, showing their parents they have a piece of paper.
Right, to make a living, to get out there and get in the mix.
Absolutely.
So to speak.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Well, dude, it's been really great talking to you, man. People can find you at traviskennedysound.com. It's a good website. And, of course, if you do want to join the Audio Pro Bootcamp, go to audioprobootcamp.com. And is there anything I'm missing? It's been great talking to you, man.
It's been great talking to you, too. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome, man.
Appreciate it.
Great job on all your work.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you're out there.
Thank you. And thanks for doing this for the Austin community. I mean, this podcast is amazing. It's like 800 and something episodes now.
Yeah.
That's incredible. How many years have you been doing it?
8 years, a little over 8 years.
100 yeah. episodes a year, approximately.
800.
Or more.
104, because I'd put out two shows a week, 52
wow.
weeks a year.
Golly.
No reruns.
That's really cool. This has got to be this has got to be the longest standing music related.
It's definitely the longest music
Austin,
one.
Right?
I think it's the second. It might be. I don't know if I gotta get with Charlie Hodge and figure out who started theirs first. But I might have started mine before he started his.
Yeah. It's a really cool thing.
Yeah.
And
thanks,
and
man.
The episodes are always... I really enjoy listening to them.
Thank you, man. Yeah. Well, thanks for being part of it.
Thank you.
Right on. Travis Kennedy. Find him at traviskennedysound.com. And if you want to find out more about Audio Pro Bootcamp, go to audioprobootcamp.com. What a great conversation that was. Great, great talking to him, man. Also, what a great guy. Travis Kennedy, man. Find him at traviskennedysound.com. Also, gang, while you're out there checking out traviskennedysound.com, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, Android Podcasts, the Podbean podcast app, wherever it is you find podcasts, you will find a new show every Tuesday and every Friday. Me talking to a lot of different artists, okay? I hope you have a great week, whatever it is you're doing, man. Go to our How Did I Get Here Facebook page. Like it. You'll see all the stuff that I'm doing. I've got shows coming up. I'm doing that XTC tribute this Saturday at Backstage with all these great artists. I'll put a link to that up there. I'll put a link to my solo show that I'm playing for Sun Radio next Wednesday. I'll put a link to the next, that show that happens Friday, January 24th. I'll put a lot of stuff up there because there's a lot of stuff going on. I want you to know about it. Also, Skyrocket's playing 310 on February 1st. A lot of stuff going on, gang. I'll post it. Go to our Facebook page. Like it. Follow it. Comment on the stuff. Let us know how we're doing. I want to thank Travis Kennedy for doing the show. I want to thank you guys for listening. Have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down.